We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
This is the Carlin vs. Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Lakers are done, but what does it mean in the coming year or so? Are they done altogether as the Lakers as we know them? Carlin vs. Joe, ESPN Radio. Poor time to take a bite of a snack bar.
Caught off guard by the top of the hour?
Yeah.
It's only been there since, you know, the start of existence.
Right. Well, as I said, I live an incredibly busy life. Sometimes it gets away from you. That's all.
I'm starting to think it's not that you're so busy.
You think I'm just not that bright?
I think it just perhaps a bit distracted.
Distracted? Yeah,
maybe it's just a bit distracted.
Maybe
someone was driving down the street outside your house and honked their horn, and that got your attention for 4 or 5 minutes.
Like a dog.
Yeah, much like a dog.
Like a dog, but I had to run downstairs and bark.
Right. I'm incredibly busy. These barks aren't going to bark themselves.
I am not going to be able to scare the neighbors to stay off my property properly unless I get out there. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Now, the whole discussion centers around what LeBron wants to do moving forward. And clearly, what LeBron wants to do is hold as much leverage as possible over the Lakers in deciding what his future is going to be. And he's going to have it. We had George Sedano on just a little while ago. LeBron has all this leverage. He can absolutely determine what the Lakers are going to do, trying to trade for somebody, whether they're trying to draft Bronny and he's forcing them to take him at the 17th pick. They're going to find out come up June 1st if they actually have their first round pick this year, because the Pelicans have the option to take it or to take their 2025 first round pick. They have to let them know by June 1st what they are doing there. And so LeBron now still wants to win, but wants to win on his terms. And I thought a cute idea that was suggested this morning, that LeBron might take less money to put a better team around him, Joe. And that was squashed pretty quickly by our guy, Wendy.
LeBron's contract for next year for the Lakers, if he opts in, calls for $51 million.
Right.
If he opts out, he is looking for contracts in that range. Before you enter fantasy land, don't forget about the salary. The salary is important. I know LeBron's made a lot of money. He wants to buy an NBA team. You don't buy an NBA team leaving $50 million on the table.
Yeah, I think the words mid-level exception will not be being used in terms of LeBron and his decision this offseason.
That's fair. I don't see myself taking discounts anytime soon. Hard to look at someone else and say he should do it.
Yeah. Ultimately here, as we see this moving forward, what are the possibilities in your mind to add to LeBron and AD to try to fix this situation?
Well, I mean, naturally, everyone's going to turn to the idea of what's the biggest name you can bring in, right? What's the biggest name you can acquire? Now, I think I'll turn it right back over to you because you have the ability to lean on people like Wendy who have suggestions for us. Wendy, we talked to Sedano a little while ago. There's some great suggestions out there.
Yeah, there are. Here is Wendy on that very discussion on Get Up this morning.
LeBron's contract.
Wrong one.
I think one name that you will hear as we get into this is Trae Young from the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks may look to break up their backcourt of DeJounte Murray and Trae Young. The Lakers were interested in trading for DeJounte Murray during this last season. Trae is the type of player that I think multiple teams will have interest in if the Hawks decide to make a move. I'm not sure that he solves a lot of what the Lakers' ills were. Their perimeter defense was a problem throughout the season and in this series, which Trae is not going to help with. But he is definitely a guy who can supercharge your offense and I think would be potentially amazing next to LeBron and AD.
I don't know about Trae Young being amazing next to LeBron and AD. Well,
let me start with this. I am all in favor of breaking up everything that's going on in Atlanta because I don't think anyone knows what the hell's going on down there. Enough is enough with that. okay? Like, yeah. It's one too many banana in the tailpipes. All of a sudden, you make this surprising run to the Eastern Conference Finals a few years ago. We're looking at this team. We're like, wow, well assembled. They're on the rise. And ever since then, they've just been awful. And then they make big trades, and then they just get more awful. And then they get hurt, and then they get into the playoffs, and then they flame out. Like, enough's enough. Whatever's going on down there, that's got to be the end of it, okay? We talk about breaking up teams like the Sixers. Atlanta, they got to break everything up. It's time to move on from that. Now, you take Trae Young, you move him there. DeJounte Murray, if he's going to go to L.A. Donovan Mitchell's a name we're going to throw out there. Anyone see his two road performances against Orlando? He went MIA. Good at home in that postseason series so far. Terrible on the road. You can throw any name you want out there. If they come with a big price tag, you're going to have big price tag LeBron James, big price tag Anthony Davis, big price tag third player. What else you got? Like, what else you got at that point?
This is my point on this. I would absolutely go the route of centering around LeBron and AD again, but really looking to improve that supporting cast. I mean, is there any reason for D'Angelo Russell to be there anymore? No. But what value does D'Angelo Russell have? Like, who's actually just going to take him when he has a player option after next season at $18 million? Can you position yourself to actually get a better supporting cast? Like, that's what I would be trying to fight for. I get that, you know, Gabe Vincent and Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura are nice players. I think I need a little higher level, don't I? I need a little higher level. Look at what Denver did in adding somebody like Aaron Gordon. How good has that worked out for them? You know, I would rather see, Joe, them try to navigate that second to third level of players below LeBron and AD as opposed to adding another superstar.
Basically, it's the idea of instead of spending $30 million on one guy, spend $15 million on two.
Yeah.
Right? Like, try to bring in guys who can round it out, because the key to what goes on in Denver is that you've got Jokic and you've got Murray, and they play very well. But then you've got the Michael Porter Juniors of the world. You got the Aaron Gordons of the world. You got the KCPs of the world who can step up and contribute in big spots. In Minnesota, some nights Karl Anthony Towns goes cold. You can't expect a lot of scoring from Rudy Gobert. That's not his thing. Anthony Edwards has some monster performances, but there are nights that he won't deliver monster performances because you can't do that every single night. Otherwise, it would just be a common performance, not a monster performance. Enter a guy like Jaden McDaniels, who can step up and put up some numbers while also playing quality defense. You need to leave yourself outs, right? It's the famous line in Rounders, breaking the cardinal expletive rule. He didn't leave himself outs.
Yep.
That's what you got to do. The Lakers have very few outs. You need Anthony Davis to be healthy and play a great game. You need LeBron James, to be healthy and play a great game. And then maybe you might have a chance to win. But there's no one else sometimes. And that's what's going to keep you from getting past Denver. That series against Denver, they just lost 4-1. Through five games, grand total, Denver scored 11 more points. That's it. That series was decided by 11 points in five games. But they just don't have the other guys they can lean on. You bring in the third guy that's going to cost a fortune. It's going to look splashy, but ultimately you need all three of those guys to stay healthy and play at a really high level to have a chance. I want to point something out. This is the one thing that gets lost in all of this. We talk about James coming back. We talk about who they can add. Do not sleep on the Anthony Davis situation, all right? He's going to be 32 years old next year. He is coming off a season in which he appeared in 76 games. That is a career high for Anthony Davis. Now, you tell me, do you see that being more next year, the same, or less? Because very rarely do we replicate outlier seasons. The last time he played anything close to this, 75 games in the 2017-2018 season, 5-6 years ago. That's the last time we saw him play this many games. So he's going to be 32. He's coming off a career high in games played. He was healthy during the playoffs. He put up monster numbers. You still lost in five in the opening round. Can you count on him to be this guy again next year? I don't think he can.
It's a fair point. I don't know how you would expect him to play that many games again. I don't know why I would play him that many games. I think I need to be able to navigate his off nights a lot more than 76 games. moving into the future at this age. So, yeah, that's a lot. Problem is, where is he going? Like, where are you trading him at 43, 57, 62 million, and then a $66 million player option in 2027, 28? I don't think he's going anywhere.
Like, no, he's staying. The point is, though, with him staying and LeBron at 40 and this third guy coming in that's going to cost a bunch of money, you're not going to have anybody else. You're not going to have outs.
Right.
You're not creating outs for yourself. And then when you get jammed up and you have no one to turn to, you get eliminated and we all shrug and go, I don't know. Is LeBron coming back to the Lakers next year? We're just going to repeat the same story next season. They're not capable of building what's necessary to win 4-7 four times in a row. There's just too much money being tied up elsewhere.
The best thing that can happen here is that Russell opts out, so at least that frees up a spot. If Russell opts out this year, which he can, and goes and finds another sucker, which he likely will, the Lakers don't have to deal with that one. At least that helps. But then the other contracts that they would have to trade all still have a couple of years left on them at least. So it's not going to be easy no matter how it goes, which is why I'm thinking more about just trying to maximize that mid-level guy. If I can try to get a little better supporting cast, maybe I can make that work. And then I'm going to have to try to play Anthony Davis in 60 games. I mean, wouldn't you think that would make the most sense?
With Davis, you can limit the games. That's fine. The point I'm getting at with Davis isn't that he's playing too many games. I'm saying he was healthy enough to play that many games.
Yeah.
He's never healthy enough to play that many games. Hence the career year in games played.
Right.
I'm not going
to
say it's
so
very
So I'm trying
likely.
To navigate that and maybe help it out a little
I'm
bit.
I'm just
That's
saying
all.
What's likely going to happen next year is he's going to regress in terms of games played because he's probably going to get dinged up. Historically, he gets hurt quite a bit.
That's very fair. Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80. There is one decision that the Lakers need to make that we haven't even discussed yet. That is next. Carlin, Joe, ESPN Radio, including on TuneIn.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Carlin versus Joe. Pizza money alert.
Pizza, pizza.
Love the situation for the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight. Going to lay the 5 over the Orlando Magic. Games 1 and 2 in Cleveland. The Cavs were laying 5.5 in both those games. They destroyed Orlando. Beat them by 14 and then beat them by 10. But everybody forgot because in games 3 and 4 when they went to Orlando, they got beat handedly by the Magic. So now the series is 2-2 coming back to Cleveland and everyone's talking about the pivotal game 5. These are two average teams. Average teams don't fare well on the road, but average teams that make the playoffs, they tend to be pretty good at home. And that's why I think Cleveland's going to smash here. Orlando in game 4, keep in mind, shot 56% from the floor. That's their 5th best performance in 86 games this season. They shot 46% from 3-point range. That's their 9th best performance in 86 games this season. Their shooting is going to fall off. So in addition to Cleveland minus 5, player prop, Donovan Mitchell over 24.5 points. At home in this series, 46% from the field, 26 points per game. On the road, 36% from the field, 15 points per game. Pizza Money's 2 and 3. Cavs minus 5 over the Magic. Donovan Mitchell over 24.5 points.
And don't forget tonight, 76ers and Knicks at the Garden, Game 5. Coverage beginning on ESPN Radio, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Knicks have the 3-1 series lead. Sean Kelly, Corey Alexander on the call, and of course, Kevin Winter with all your pregame and postgame analysis would be the word, and preview. Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, presented by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with Life electronic device and pet health insurance. Joseph, Dave McManaman, ESPN.com, covers the Lakers among other teams out west. Biggest question mark for LA next season, beyond LeBron James, the status of Darvin Ham. Ham's job is, quote, very much in jeopardy. So we've heard that his job was in jeopardy. And then we had Woj report that Frank Vogel's job is in peril. We're going to need to come up with some more adjectives or verbs, whatever.
You don't like peril?
Peril. I guess, actually, they're not adjectives. They're more nouns. Perilous would be an adjective. Again, English degree.
English degree, yeah, looking good.
Yeah, sharp. What job would you rather have right now, Lakers or Suns?
Lakers, because I'd have a chance to compete to some extent. I don't know what's happening with the Suns. Like, if I have to make the decision right now, which of those three is going to be back? Booker, probably, because he's the most appealing to build something around moving forward. If you're Kevin Durant, do you want to stay? Like, we're going to have some very interesting conversations about Kevin Durant moving forward and what he wants to get out of the final years of his career. Bradley Beal was a just complete disaster, especially in that final game against Minnesota. The fouls, the lack of offensive production, the failures on defense, he was just a mess. I don't know if you can get rid of him because he's the only guy in the NBA with a no-trade clause. So that whole scenario in Phoenix, combined with the fact that they don't have picks, cap space, all that stuff, that just looks like a mess. At least in LA, I have the illusion of competition, and I should be able to compete to some extent. But the job's probably going to be short-lived because coaching LeBron James generally is pretty short-lived, is it not?
It is. But honestly, as we were discussing yesterday about our personal dream scenarios of getting an NBA head coaching job with an unpredictable owner and getting fired after 1 year and paid to do nothing for the next several years, I think I'd have to go with Matt Ishbia. If we're just going down that road.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you want to get fired quickly and then get paid.
Exactly. Yeah, if I want unpredictability, I'm more likely to get more stability from LeBron than I am from Matt Ishbia right now. So that's the way I'm going. Honestly, I would rather go the direction of the Phoenix Suns at the moment. And the reason is, I think they're going to move on from Durant. I think Durant gets moved this offseason. I don't know how you handle the Bradley Beal situation. It's hard not to like Devin Booker as a player, and you've already seen what he is capable of doing. And I think when you look at Booker, he is at a much different juncture in his career than Durant is. If Durant is just simply going around and trying to chase titles right now, that's not a great fit. And I look at, I mean, just doing what you were talking about earlier, if we're going to operate off of history, why would I trust Durant in the situation to be all in, to buy in, all that stuff? Because the disaster that happened in Brooklyn, a lot of it was Durant's fault for not stepping up and taking a piece of leadership with that team, because that's just not what he wants to do. If I'm in Phoenix and I am going to keep Devin Booker as a centerpiece, which I have absolutely no reason to believe they won't, I'd rather go in that direction. I really, truly would. LeBron, I don't know how much longer he wants to hang in. And you're just outlining how much of a wild card Anthony Davis's injuries are.
Yeah, with the LA situation, think of it like this. LeBron James just completed his 21st season in the NBA, 21. He's had 9 different head coaches, or he's got his 9th head coach coming up here, I believe. So he's going to have 9 coaches in 22 years. Like, that's not, it's not really a formula for success. So many of these coaching decisions are based on what's going to make him happy. Maybe the best thing for him isn't what makes him happy. Maybe it's what makes him uncomfortable. People tend to be at their best when they're uncomfortable, right? Like, that's what makes you better. Being uncomfortable, having to do hard things, having to challenge, having to compete. Instead of looking for these coaches who are going to come in, play the company line, and do what you want, maybe try to turn it over to someone who's not really there to placate you. Maybe lean on some veteran who's got a plan. Because the problem with all this shuffling in and out of coaches is that you're also shuffling in and out philosophies. And different philosophies and different strategies call for different types of players in different types of situations. So here comes Coach A. He has philosophy A. He needs players from Group A to fit that philosophy. Well, Coach A didn't really work out, so let's fire him. Let's bring in Coach B. But Coach B has philosophy B. And that requires players from Group B. So now you got to retool the roster to get these players to fit the new philosophy of the new head coach. And then you're going to go ahead and blow him out. And then you're going to retool everything again. Like, you don't have consistency. That's your problem. You just keep changing everything up. Look at the Raiders. We kind of laughed at the Brock Bowers pick. Not because we don't like Bowers. Bowers is a great player. But they just drafted Michael Mayer out of Notre Dame in the second round last year.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter to the new organization because they didn't draft Mayer. They might not like him. So now they see Bowers and they say, this is great for us. So now it's like, well, why the hell did we draft Mayer last year? Well, that's because you had a different coach and because you had a different general manager. They had a different philosophy. So now you got a new philosophy. Now you're burning another pick on the same position, which probably ranks in the hierarchy of positions right above punter. And it's not to disrespect tight ends, but it's not a quarterback. It's not a left tackle. It's not a pass rusher. It's not a corner. It's not a wide receiver. It doesn't rank in that top five echelon. That's what LeBron needs. Someone to come in, someone to bring down the hammer a little bit, someone to have a plan and a philosophy that they are not dictating. The players fall in line with the coach's plan. Bring in the coach because you trust his plan and his philosophy and the players that he's going to build around it. That's what they need to do. You shuffle guys in and out like this, you're going to get inconsistent results because you have an inconsistent process.
I think it's a cute idea. I don't say that disrespectfully. I just don't expect that anybody at this juncture of LeBron's career is ever fully going to have his ear. And honestly, he'll do whatever they want. I have trouble seeing that because I have trouble seeing that in the league, period. Like, how many coaches around the league right now do you feel like make a big difference with what goes on?
Spoelstra, but that's the outlier. So right, that's the natural one. But to your point, you're right.
There's a few more.
Tibbs.
I mean, Tibbs absolutely does. I don't know how you can argue that. I can't sit here and tell you that Joe Mazzulla makes any kind of a positive difference. I can't sit here and say that about Nick Nurse right now with everything we've seen. Like,
Udoka in Houston.
Yeah.
Without question.
The point is, it's a handful at most, right?
Correct.
So I don't see where many players are really going to listen to guys and get locked in and understand that they know what they're doing, you know? And I think that's more problematic than anything else. Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, presented by Progressive Insurance. Did the Michael Penix Jr. selection in the NFL draft send one team into euphoria or panic? That's after Joe has this from Granger.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry out there, as well as access to the product specialists who have both the knowledge and the experience to answer all your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people even safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
With the 10th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Minnesota Vikings select
J.J. McCarthy,
quarterback,
Michigan.
He's a great leader and a great team player. I don't think there's any question about that. I think in the end, it'll be good enough. I really do. But I think that's one of the things that, like, why isn't he the first guy? His overall accuracy in third down.
This is a perfect situation for J.J. to enter just because you have Sam Darnold in place, so your bridge quarterback is there. J.J. is not going to be forced to play right away.
It was one of the more fascinating storylines of the draft. And when I think fascinating storylines, there's one guy I want on top of it, and that is Jeff Darlington, ESPN NFL reporter. Carlin versus Joe. Jeffrey, how are you?
That's the nicest thing you've ever said about me.
I've said many nice things. You just haven't heard them. I don't say them to your face.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah, you don't need to feed my ego.
No, it's healthy enough. Not unlike myself. Jeff, listen, let's talk about this. This was an interesting scenario from the get-go. So let's just start here. When did the Vikings realize that they would not have to go up that far to get McCarthy?
Well, honestly, I mean, probably when the Giants didn't take him at six, and they got a sense that that was going to be the case. But, I mean, you're right. It was always going to be, for a team picking 11th overall, it was always going to be one of the more fascinating teams. It's the reason that, for instance, I went to Minneapolis, because we saw that sort of playing out. But they knew, and I had talked to Kevin O'Connell literally an hour before the draft started, and I was asking him, do you think you could still get to number three overall? And he basically said, like, not, you know, we're not going to give up everything that we have to do it. And they did try. They tried one more time, even when New England was on the clock. But it was very clear the Patriots were going to take Drake May, and that Minnesota was not going to blow them away. So at that point, that's where I think the nerves were, the tension existed, because it's like, all right, so Caleb, Jaden, and Drake are off the board. The Giants at six were a possibility to take a quarterback. When they took Neighbors, when they ended up going wide receiver, it was like, okay, this could work out fine. But then the Falcons at eight pick Penix, and all of a sudden you're saying one more quarterback off the board. So to answer your question, I think that there was a significant amount of tension in the Vikings war room until that moment when they made the trade with the Jets to move into 10.
This is fascinating, because for a team that desperately needed a quarterback, they were willing to gamble that the Giants weren't going to take one. If the Giants take McCarthy and the Falcons take Penix, that's it for Minnesota. That was the plan for the Vikings?
Well, I don't think that they thought the Falcons were going to take Penix. So at that point, had the Giants taken JJ, and I think they had decent information that made them feel like the Giants were not going to take McCarthy, based on the idea that the Giants were not trying to make moves up to compete with Minnesota's potential quest to try to get McCarthy themselves. But, like, I think when they went wide receiver, there was probably a bit of a sigh of relief, because I don't think anybody thought the Falcons were going Penix at that point. So, you know, it's kind of funny, though, because we've been on the Falcons. Like, a lot of people have been critical of the Falcons for going quarterback there when they already had one. And then to the counterpoint, the Vikings sitting at 11 didn't have a quarterback, and they were not moving up. It was fascinating.
Jeff Darlington, ESPN NFL reporter. So to be clear, when they took Penix, was that a panic situation, or was it like, we have to get to 10, or we have to move up here a little bit, or were they worried that somebody was going to, whether it's the Raiders or the Broncos, were going to try to get to 9 in front of them?
The Broncos were the concern, for sure, because there was a lot of talk fueled by Sean Payton's apparent lies that the Broncos were going to move up and try to get someone, maybe McCarthy. And that's why, ultimately, the Vikings made that trade with the Jets. I know that they have a good relationship with Joe Douglas, the GM with the Jets. They were in constant contact. Didn't have to give up that much to do it. But there was one point to talk about, you know, dealing with the tension of the first 11 picks or 9 picks before they ended up making the trade. You talk about, at one point, there was conversations in Minnesota about trading their 2 picks, 23rd overall, right? I think I have the right 23rd and 11.
Yep.
To get all the way up ahead of the Giants to take J.J. McCarthy. So the fact that they were able to get him at 10 actually played out unbelievably well, even if probably took a few years off the lives of everybody in that building.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the thing is, the Giants could have taken McCarthy. That's a realistic scenario. But the fact that they were surprised, that like everyone was surprised the Falcons took Penix, it shouldn't be a surprise, because 8 was always a tradable destination, as was 9 with the Bears. So they should have been prepared for all those contingencies, and it sounds like they were just willing to roll the dice to see if everyone made it to them.
The funny thing is, 8 was a tradable destination, and the Rams had talked to the Falcons about making a trade into 8, but not to take a quarterback. Instead, there was talk about Brock Bowers going 8 to the Rams, and that didn't end up happening. But to your point, like all of those, even the Titans at 7, all of those felt like potential trade destinations for the team that was trying to make the jump. Now, if you believe Sean Payton, the way he talks about Bo Nix, he was willing to wait until 12 to take him anyway. So as much as, I mean, this is where you get into the whole smokescreen game. What do you believe before and what do you believe after? But if you believe after what everybody is saying, J.J. McCarthy was always going to fall to the Vikings. Bo Nix was always going to fall to the Broncos. And the Broncos were never going to try to move up. Now, again, I don't know if I completely believe that. But the intel that those guys had at that point was that they were going to, the Vikings didn't think that they had to trade up in front of the Giants to get J.J. McCarthy.
Jeff, was McCarthy their guy all along? Do you believe that McCarthy was their guy?
No. Drake May was their guy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Jaden Daniels, but it was very clear to everybody that they were not getting Jaden. Even on draft day, there was still a sense that they were going to make a push for Drake May with the Patriots. But it wasn't. They weren't going to be able to trade 23 and 11 to get to 3. And that was essentially what I believe they were offering, pretty close to that. And it was going to take, you know, multiple first rounds in future years to make that jump. And the Patriots also were not interested in going all the way back to 11. Maybe they could have made that trade with the Giants, but the Giants ultimately decided against that as well. I think that the Vikings were the best case scenario for the Patriots, but they didn't want to slide that far back and not get an impact player.
Did they? Any chance they had Penix rated ahead of McCarthy?
The Vikings?
Yeah.
No. No. In fact, they viewed them somewhat similarly, but I can tell you, as a matter of fact, that they definitely McCarthy was their guy ahead of Penix. Had they been picking 8, if it was flipped, if they were picking 8 and the Falcons were picking 10, I believe that they both would have ended up with the same players.
Jeff, just quickly, what's your take on the, well, I'll use it not to use a jaded question, but what's your take on the absurdity of the Falcons taking Penix with Kirk Cousins getting $100+ million?
I mean, I think that the pendulum has swung a bit the other way in terms of like, you know, I don't necessarily buy what the Falcons are saying. They're trying hard to spin this. Yeah, they are. I think the honest truth is, if you gave them truth serum and they were saying it, they'd say, well, you know, Kirk Cousins is 35 years old coming off an Achilles injury. Yes, maybe you'd argue that they shouldn't have signed him, but I would also argue that there's a lot of teams 6 months after they signed, there's a lot of players on the Jets 6 months after they signed Aaron Rodgers that wish they had someone other than Zach Wilson under center. So, you know, things change. I think that time will tell whether this was the right move or not. I understand the idea of allocating certain resources, like the 8th overall pick, to a player that's going to help the team now. If Michael Penix turns out to be Patrick Mahomes, no one will care. If he does not turn out to be anything near Patrick Mahomes, then yeah, I think in retrospect, we can definitely say that that was a baffling and misguided decision.
Jeff, no chicanery today, just information.
I know. Wow.
I know.
We're really going after it.
You're fantastic, Jeff. Fantastic work.
Amazing.
Locked out.
Amazing.
All right.
Jeff Darlington, ESPN NFL reporter. Don't worry. We'll get back to it. Don't worry. Thanks, brother.
One note here. One note on all this, and I want everyone to remember this. Next year, when we get to week 16, 17, 18 in the NFL, and the conversation comes up about tanking off a few games late in the season for draft position, and everyone starts yelling and screaming, no, it's Herm Edwards, that's why you play to win the game. Remember that. Remember that, because that one win could be the difference in your entire franchise's future. It could be the difference of one or two draft positions that changes everything. Remember something. Lovie Smith coaching the Texans, yep, winning that game in week 18, set the Bears up in a situation where over the long haul, they ended up getting Caleb Williams. It all comes together because of these late season decisions where some teams just don't understand the value of the loss. No, 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 you play to win. I agree, you play to win. You play to win Super Bowls. You don't play to win meaningless games to get your fifth victory in week 18. Nobody cares. You're probably going to get fired anyway for that 5-12 season. Go get the better draft position when you realize you can't compete for Super Bowls.
Okay, so the Lakers should have tanked it so they didn't get the Nuggets.
Yeah, because Oklahoma City looks so easy with the way they just swept the Pelicans out of the playoffs. Dad, I heard Greeny saying that this morning. Hey, you know, in hindsight, it looks like I was right, but also the Thunder did look good. Yeah, the Thunder kicked some ass in that round.
I would absolutely 100% agree with you on everything you said. And even though he hasn't turned out to be the superstar yet, remember the Jets beat the Rams, cost themselves Trevor Lawrence. Remember that too.
It's just incredible what some of these teams do when we're just so happy we were able to gut this one out. I'm so happy for the guys. I'm glad you're happy for the guys and their fourth win this season, because you really screwed up the franchise moving forward. Because now when it comes to all this draft talk, well, we don't want to give up all that to go up and get our guy. Well, then just lose a game that doesn't matter. You wouldn't even be in this situation.
Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. Wait until you hear what the Giants were planning to do with the sixth pick until it was thwarted at the last minute. That's next. We're on ESPN Radio and on the iHeartRadio app.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
With the sixth pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the New York Giants select Malik Nabers, wide receiver, LSU.
This is, to me, a terrible decision. I am hard-pressed to understand how this is the best decision for the New York Giants.
This shows that they have belief in Daniel Jones, and we saw what he was able to do in 2022. Their line of thinking is, let's get him a weapon, let's see if he can return to form, and if things don't work out, we have the flexibility to cut bait.
Frankly, this is where Mike Tannenbaum and I were most at odds potentially the other night on this decision by the Giants.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Skip J.J. McCarthy and go in this direction. Mike's big McCarthy guy. Me? Not so much, as you know.
Carl, so you're saying you like the idea of the Giants going after a wide receiver, getting some weapons?
Absolutely, especially at the level of Malik Nabers, who I think is going to be fantastic. It's not... And let's be clear, it has nothing to do with me believing in Daniel Jones. Nothing.
We have to believe in him to some extent, right?
Well, I would believe in him slightly more than drafting J.J. McCarthy here. But apparently, this was not definitively the plan to take Malik Nabers over J.J. McCarthy. Apparently, there was somebody else that the Giants wanted to take over Malik Nabers. But that plan was thwarted at the last minute, as we find out from Adam Schefter, who was on the Pat McAfee show.
Hey, I believe that the Giants wanted Joel to slide to them. That's my belief, that was the hope that he was going to get to them. And I think some of this quarterback talk for the Giants might have been a little camouflage to try to get somebody like Minnesota to trade up. Because if they traded up to the Chargers spot at 5 and gotten J.J. McCarthy, Joel would have slid right to the Giants slot at number 6. Mm. And that would have been ideal for a team that last year allowed its quarterbacks to be sacked 85 times.
Yeah, and listen, that was a problem for the Giants offensive line. I don't know that I buy definitively that they were hoping to get Joe Alt. He is a tremendous, tremendous offensive lineman, and I think he's going to be great in the league. Having said that, are the Giants giving up on Evan Neal that quickly from just a couple of years ago? And secondly, they tried to go up and get Drake May. So once they didn't get Drake May, was that the plan? I mean, I personally think they ended up in a better situation.
I wonder how many offensive linemen you need to draft in the top 10 picks before you actually stop having offensive line problems.
That's a good point.
Because it seems like they've been doing this for a while and they're not really getting any better. They drafted Andrew Thomas in the top 10 out of Georgia. They drafted Evan Neal in the top 10 out of Alabama. They're looking at Joe Alt. It's like, at what point is this organization going to realize, like, you can keep drafting these guys, but at some point you have to have some results. I think the Giants had a disastrous draft. And my thought process moving forward is that this is the final year of Brian Daboll, and this organization is going to get blown up. They allowed one mistake to turn into 3 to 5 mistakes, and that ultimately is going to doom them. They came in, they had Daniel Jones. They said, all right, it's year one. This is a total rebuild. We're going to go ahead and we're going to roll it out. We're going to see what we can do here. It's an evaluation year. And they shocked everybody. They went to the playoffs. They beat a really bad Minnesota team in the postseason, a really fraudulent Minnesota team, I should say. And for some reason then, everyone in New York thought, hey, we got it figured out. Look at how smart we are. This team's actually a hell of a lot better because we're great coaches. So they went ahead and gave Daniel Jones the contract, and they went out there in year two with these playoff expectations, and they don't have anyone analytically minded, analytically driven, because anyone with half a pulse like myself who understands the very basics of this stuff, basics, not the advanced level stuff, just the basics, could have told you this team is nowhere as good as they look. When you really get into the numbers, there are problems, there are red flags. They didn't understand that. They went out, they got their teeth kicked in last year. So now they go into the draft in year three. There's a ton of pressure on the coaching staff. The quarterback is not the guy. I'll go to the grave with that one. And they decide, we'll go wide receiver. We're going to pass on the quarterbacks out there. We don't want to trade for Drake May, even though we really like him. We're not going to take McCarthy. We're not going to take Penix. We're not going to take Nix. That's fine. This team's going to go out this year. They're going to win 6-7 games. It's not going to look good. And then Daboll's going to be axed at the end of the season. I'll go ahead and throw that one up on the big board. I know the producers like to do that back there in the screening room. You can go ahead and put that up on the big board in big, bold letters for me. Right now, you know how many teams have worse odds to win the NFC, Carlin?
Than the Giants?
Yeah, than the Giants. How many do you think that would be?
Two.
One. One team, the Panthers. Wow. That's the only team you have better odds than to win the NFC. Your win total for next year is 6.5. Vegas says, you know what? We're going to set your win total at 6.5, and we're going to heavily juice the under. You got to pay for the privilege of betting the under. It's minus 140. You want to bet over 6.5 wins? Plus 110. Their odds to win the NFC are 60-1. The only team longer is Carolina. In the division, they're 10-1 to win the East. They're behind the Commanders. Well, who are the Commanders? They got Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels. And like all of a sudden, the Commanders have leapfrogged the Giants. So I'm going to tell you right now, that's the bold prediction for the Giants this year. They have mismanaged this quarterback situation from the beginning. They let one mistake turn into three mistakes. They're going to have a lousy year, and they're blowing out the coaching staff at the end of the season.
Well, what if they were trying to get up to three and they couldn't?
Oh, boo-hoo. Boo-hoo.
Okay, well, here's what I'll tell you. Like, and I'm not defending the Giants. The only thing that might have been worse here is if they had taken McCarthy over Neighbors. That would have been an abject disaster, because I don't believe in Daniel Jones either. But if they were trying to get up to three, like I had heard that for Minnesota to get up to three, and they had offered up the 3 first-round picks, 11-23, and next year's first-round pick, it was also going to cost them like Christian Darrisaw or Justin Jefferson. Like, they weren't doing that. So the price tag was ridiculously high on what they were doing there. But I can't disagree that the Giants are in a bad spot. Neighbors will be a good player for them for a long time. The rest, oh boy.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.